How the fuck did we end up here? Only 100 days into the Trump regime, and I'm already thinking, what country do I want to escape to? Scotland, that could be an interesting place. Maybe somewhere in the Caribbean. Oh, there's climate crisis, though. Maybe somewhere in Africa. Oh, he could revoke all the visas from there. I'm like Kristi Noem over there with her go bag in the restaurant. They said Kristi Noem, the Secretary of Homeland Security's purse got stolen, which is a perfect encapsulation of the Trump regime, and that the Secretary of Homeland Security can't protect her own purse and can't secure her own belongings at a freaking restaurant in Washington, D.C. But of course, she's just the master at keeping all of America safe. And in that bag, the most interesting thing was that she had $3,000 and a passport. That sounds like a go bag. Like she's ready to escape at any minute. Like she's going to flee the country. Combine that with Hegseth's text chatting his wife and brother war plans and stuff like that. I mean, the Trump regime's completely incompetent, and we all know it, and they're authoritarian. So you don't just have the corruption and the evil of an authoritarian regime, you have the incompetence of basically an anarchy regime. Other people are not trying to come here. They're like, oh, tourism's going to be down this year. A lot of people have canceled their plans. No shit. Nobody wants to come to a country where they think they can get snatched off the street and sent to fucking Rent-A-Gulag in El Salvador. Like, this shit is ridiculous. The Massachusetts student who she was basically snatched off the street because of supposedly anti-Israel views, and then they've now got her in some kind of Louisiana detention facility. I only know this because Senator Ed Markey from Massachusetts and Ayanna Pressley, the representative of Squad fame, they went to meet with her, and I thought, wait a minute, when somebody's student visa gets revoked, I would have assumed they would have just been sent back to their home country. Why are they in a prison, an immigration detention facility in the middle of nowhere in a state that's not even remotely close to where their school was? What in the actual fuck is going on over here? Every single day, you can't keep up with the level of bad news. It just feels like an onslaught. I go in and I check my email. It's like a black hole. Breaking news from the New York Times, and there'll be 15 different bad stories. And then over Daily Kos has got a roundup of all the things you might have missed. They're even worse. You can't even believe that an enormous story like the fact that Doge is possibly a Russian asset. They went into government databases, and then within 15 minutes, ISP addresses from Russia had been able to access what Doge was accessing. Puppet of the Russian government, they go in and access federal databases, and then Russians go in and look at what they're looking at, and then information goes back up onto Starlink, Elon Musk system. It looks kind of doubtful they weren't coordinating, and you saw that story play out, and it's now disappeared. That story broke with a whistleblower who went on MSNBC and PBS, and it was covered for less than 24 hours, and now I don't even hear people talking about it. I'm like, that seems like an enormous story to me. That is at least as big as Signalgate, where you just have a boob texting war plans to a journalist and then eventually his own family members. Now you've got an enemy nation being able to access all of the government databases that Doge goes into, and nobody's really even talking about this. That's incredible that such a huge story can disappear. And it kind of feels like the news is so bad every day. There's something new and awful. You get text alerts. Oh, Trump's going to go after Act Blue. He now wants his attorney general, his henchwoman, Barbie Goebbels, to go into to investigate Act Blue, which is the Democrats' biggest fundraising platform. I'm in there. I gave money to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And I secretly suspect that the only reason they're doing that is to look at exactly who each individual donor for the Democratic Party is, and to make a list of all that, and then possibly make stuff harder on them in some kind of a way, if there's any way they can. Is anybody here on a visa? Is anybody here on an expired visa that they forgot to renew 6 months ago? Is there any way we can make somebody's life more difficult that we have power over? And it's all about trying to intimidate people out of not giving campaign donations, to try to deprive the Democrats of their biggest fundraising platform. If Joe Biden were doing this to Republicans, Republicans would be screaming. They would be in the streets screaming bloody murder, talking about tyranny. Fox News would have this blasted 24/7, and the news is so bad, we're barely even able to keep up with it. If you're not watching MSNBC, you're going to miss a lot of stories. I'll watch MSNBC, I'll turn it on, and there'll be something new every day. And that kind of brings me to this podcast, where last year I made the podcast monthly, where it's like you could pretty much guarantee there would be a monthly episode. It was an election year. 2024 is a more popular year to listen to a political podcast. This year it's more seasonal, where I might do like 4 or 5 episodes by the end of this year. This is only the second one. Probably feels like we've done more episodes than that, because here it is May. It's only the second episode of this year. Might feel longer than that, and it's the end of the American Endgame trilogy that was before, which was right before the election, where it was very dark and scary. Darkness at Noon. If you've ever read that book, it's a terrific book, one of my favorites, but it felt like we were on the precipice during which was supposed to be during the transition between November to January. But when I saw Trump had won all seven swing states, I thought, fuck it, I'll just wait till the inauguration, or I might wait till never. Who cares at this point? You know? And then now we have after, which is 100 days into his regime. So you can see fully what is he changing and what is he trying to break? What is he trying to smash? And it is about as bad as I expected. I think if you go back and listen to all of the podcast episodes I'm doing last year, practically screaming in your face, do not vote for Donald Trump. I can't make it more clear, no matter what your grievances are with the Democratic Party. It was so insane to me. People say, well, Kamala Harris is not perfect. Well, sure, nobody's perfect. See, that's all the reason I don't need to vote for her. They're both equally bad. I'll vote for Trump. I'm like, well, you could stay home. No, I'll vote for Trump. It felt like all of the left-leaning people who said, well, I usually lean left and always vote leftist, but I don't like her for some button she wore 5 years ago. I'm going to stay home and not vote. And all the right-leaning people, they all showed up and voted. Everybody on the right showed up and voted, no matter what. You would hear people say, I don't even agree with half the stuff he wants to do. Tariffs are bullshit. But you know what? He wants to shake things up. I'll push the red button. Push the blue button, and everything stays basically as it is. Push the red button, and the world might blow up. Red button. I'm sick of this shit. Nuclear apocalypse, 2024. Let's do it. It just felt like so many people just instinctually, and of course, we talked about this in the last episode. I brought up racism and got all the into the weeds and proved that her race absolutely had something to do with her loss, given a lot of different factors. I got all into it last episode. Don't necessarily want to repeat myself, although you have to, because what you're seeing now is you'll lay out a brilliant argument discussing about Kamala Harris's race impacted it. It'll be 10 minutes long. The horde, which are white conservative males that all say variations of the same thing, they skip that. And then the next episode, you're just building on it and you say something else. And then they go comment and be like, what about this? And you're like, well, I just addressed all that in the last episode. I guess you didn't listen. It's just frustrating to have to keep moving backwards over and over. But that's how Trumpers are about, are moving backwards. The thing I was going to say about having a seasonal podcast, it's basically impossible because I could record this, I could release all this, and then literally in 10 hours, the whole game's just changed because Trump's declared war on Zimbabwe or something, and all of it goes out the window where it's just all up to his moods. He changes his mind. You don't know what he's going to do. He's literally crazy. People call him the Mad King from Game of Thrones. I started doing that last year. I noticed a lot of people doing it. It's the truth. Putin is the Night King, the icy lord of death, and he's the main villain, but Trump is the Mad King. I think Game of Thrones is pretty good in terms of political analogies for what really the world at large is right now. Different leaders. Netanyahu, he would be some sneaky minor lord who's kind of off in the shadows ruling his tyranny, but in a more localized way. A seasonal podcast is both going to be too late and too much, because if I were to go back and recap every single bad thing that's happened since the last episode, this would be a 5 hour long miniseries. I mean, there's no way I could fit it all into a 45 to an hour long minute episode. I could also be upended completely by the time that I edit and post this, because he's completely stabbed his own chief of staff to death in the Oval Office, and Republicans are like, hell, Trump, we didn't like that bitch, no way. You've never really seen it to where a politician can get away with everything, and we are seeing where the stress lines are. American democracy doesn't feel that people care. Immigration, they care a little bit. People are kind of caring that he deported an American citizen to an El Salvadorian rent a gulag. I think it scares the shit out of people because they realize, oh, we could be next. This guy has turned on everybody who has ever been unfortunate enough to get close to him. I know I will leave people out just to recap it, but it is endless. Mike Pence, his former VP that he tried to have killed when he followed the Constitution, half his original cabinet, Elaine Chao, very bad. Bill Barr, he stinks. All the people he fired, the generals, Scaramucci, a longtime friend that he turned on, every wife he's ever had, pretty much. Michael Cohen, his personal attorney who went to prison on his behalf. All three of his campaign managers went to jail on his behalf. The millions of people that got taken by his charity fraud, his university fraud, his multi-level marketing scheme, his Stop the Steal fraud, his tax fraud, all of the people who have bought his worthless merchandise over the years, the people who bought the NFTs and they thought they were going to be worth something. Then he came out and he released more NFTs, diluting the value of the first ones. The suckers who were going to get taken in by investing in his Trump coin, his cryptocurrency, the people who have already got taken in investing in Truth Social, his social media platform, all of the bankruptcies and business failures he's had over the years, thousands of lawsuits where people took him to court, saying he ripped me off, he did not pay me. Mark Cuban case, where he put forward that he couldn't believe that Trump and Michael Cohen were proud of the fact that they didn't pay their vendors. He's like, for the business community, the fact you don't pay people on time or ever, that they have to take you to court for every transaction, means you're not worth a shit as a businessman. The whole system would fall apart. And you have to understand what he means. Imagine somebody comes to your house and you've put something on Facebook. I'm selling this couch and it's a good couch, but it's time to go. It's $50. Do you want to buy this or not? People come there, they buy the couch for $50. They give you the $50, you get the couch. The next day they come back and say, where's my $50? And you say, well, I sold you the couch yesterday. No, you didn't. Give me that $50 back. You said, look, we had an honor basis system. Are you going to give me the couch back? No, I never got the couch, but you came here. I saw you. You ticked it up. You put it in your truck. You left. I saw you leave it. No, give me my $50 back. Let's go to court over this shit. If everybody acted how he acts, the American business system would collapse, because even the simplest transactions would be a court case. Most of American business is kind of like, we're going to basically stick to the deals that we make. We're not going to try to get out of this. He doesn't do that. So many people have had to take him to court for fucking them. Imagine paying a landscaper to cut your grass that did the whole goddamn lawn, and then you say, I'm not paying you for that. You'd be like, but I cut the lawn. I trimmed the trees. I did everything. I'm not paying you for it. I don't care. Take me to court. It'll cost you more to sue me than it will for me to pay you. And then you have to take them to court to spend $300 to get the $150 back. I mean, this shit is ridiculous. And that's how he operated. He would make even the simplest transactions a fucking legal case. And now the guy who did that and bankrupted on multiple things and all of the business scams that I just listed and ran through that people got snickered over, well, he's in charge of the Treasury and he wants to push out Jerome Powell so he can fully control the Federal Reserve. He wants to control the entirety of American money. What on earth could go wrong letting a lifelong con artist and fucking idiot and possible Chinese and Russian asset control the American economy? What on earth could happen? This thing about tariffs where people say, well, he's just trying to bring American manufacturing back. If you believe that's what he's doing, I have some beautiful beachfront property in Kansas that I would love to sell you. You don't need to look at it. You should just trust me and pay me what I asked for it. And don't even let me give you the deed or anything like that. I own it. Trust me. It's there. And let me sell it to you. But people in the media are just kind of going along with this. They're basically being like, well, he's trying to bring manufacturing back. Is this what's going to work? Is this what's not going to work? This is not what this shit is about. I can't believe people are stupid enough to believe that shit. If he cared about American manufacturing, if that was a priority for this man, why did he make his clothing in Mexico and Bangladesh? Every product Trump's ever made has been offshored overseas and made cheaper there and brought here. Last year, he was selling an American Bible that was $60 and it was made in China. The so-called Lee Greenwood, America's great, here's the Constitution, God bless the USA, made in China. He doesn't give a damn. He's never cared about that. Biden was already doing everything he said he's trying to do. Biden was already bringing American manufacturing back. Biden was already reorienting supply chains away from China. Barack Obama wanted to do the Asian trade agreement where it cut out all the countries but China to where they would make more trade with the United States and reorient them towards the United States. Trump blew that shit up. He killed that when he even took office, saying this is just the Asian version of NAFTA, and it really wasn't the same thing at all. But he just killed it sight unseen because it had Obama germs on it. Then when it came to Joe Biden and what he's done with the CHIPS Act, the Sciences Act, the infrastructure bill, all of the huge major bills where Biden's like, we can bring factory jobs back to America, but they're going to be very well-paying high-end jobs. It doesn't make sense for us to bring a sweatshop back here. Here's incredibly low wages to make socks with. We need stuff that can support American labor, skilled labor, and that would be computer chips, solar panels, windmill parts, things of that nature. And Trump doesn't want to do any of that. He killed a lot of the Biden incentives and grants that were going out. He's turning the faucet off. When people talk about all the federal layoffs he's doing, that's pretty bad, but the government money he's slashing is even worse. John Hopkins University, one of the most secure places in America to work in terms of job security, they just laid off 2,000 people. It's the biggest layoff that they've ever had. When you turn off the spigot for research and funding, that affects tens of thousands. Science, math, and engineering jobs, the STEM jobs that he's trying to get back, so-called, with the tariffs and what he's doing, all those great-paying manufacturing jobs, Biden was already doing that, and he just stomped all over it. What this is really about for him is one of two things, and it's only one of two things. Either what most people would like to believe, that he's just fully corrupt, or that he is actually an enemy agent of China and Russia. The first way is that somebody a long time ago told him that the robber barons before FDR did not pay income taxes, and that was before the progressive income tax system. So he thinks in his mind, him and his robber baron buddies, they can get a massive tax cut, pay almost nothing in taxes, which a lot of them don't anyway, but at least it will be fully on the books that they pay almost nothing in taxes if the progressive income tax system is replaced with tariffs. That would be corruption because, again, it's something that disproportionately benefits him, which you would think people would know that. When you vote for a guy who has been rich his entire life, does he know what you go through? Of course not. He has never had a struggle. He worked at McDonald's for like an hour and it was closed and he could barely do it, and says, I don't think Kamala Harris ever worked at McDonald's. And then, of course, the fucking idiots in the media were like, well, whether she did or did not work at McDonald's, that's not the point. No, she did work there. What the hell are you talking about? Because this fucking buffoon comes in and it's like, well, I was sweating. I had to put fries into a cup and hand it out the window. This is too rigorous. No one could do this because I can't do it. And then the media saying, well, whether she did or didn't, like, they just immediately took that shit on faith. But he had an honest job for minutes and it almost killed him. He almost dropped dead of a heart attack. He could not do honest labor if he were forced to ever in his entire life. And people are like, he sees me. He represents my interest. He's going to bring the factory jobs back. This man who shits in a gold toilet and eats KFC on his private plane, picks a porn star out of a catalog and marries her as his third wife, pulls her into the White House, and it's the first lady you've ever seen that's pictorials everywhere. Man, he's so relatable. He lives in a country club that he owns. How relatable this guy is. He goes to his own golf courses and wins the trophy almost every time. When the economy was crashing and it was cratering, you might have seen the Daily Show clip where a reporter was asking him, not about the economy, not about his own tariffs killing trillions of dollars in the stock market, which is people's 401ks, it is people's IRAs, it is myself who has stocks independent of that. I think a lot of people should have stocks. Wasn't asking him about that. They were asking him, hey, how'd you like today's tournament, sir? It was good because I won. Did you see? I won the trophy. And it was boo. I mean, can you believe a president who's that out of touch? People are like, man, I'm losing tens of thousands of dollars and I only had tens of thousands of dollars to start with. What the hell is going on? The president won a golf trophy today at his tournament. It was a very good day, so they say on Fox News. And you think, how absolutely out of touch can you be? And the people who said, well, I have to vote for Trump because Kamala Harris, she just doesn't connect well with me. She's not relatable. I can't connect to her. She's West Coast. She's from a blue state. It's like, you have to be shitting me. That so many white males, his horde, were all saying that. It really shows you that she just could not have reached these people no matter what because of the identity. And this sort of gets to the main theme of the podcast, which is Fool's Paradise, No Country for Smart Men, and Mrs. Putin. I'm sure you could guess who Mrs. Putin is. Probably figured that part out because I've only dropped about 12 references to the fact that Trump is a Russian agent and a Russian puppet, which is the second thing. If he's not a robber baron, and if he's not just trying to replace the progressive income tax system with tariffs, the second possibility is he is actively trying to hurt the United States on behalf of Russia and China. Who benefits from these tariffs? Who's benefited from the chaos of the last couple of weeks? Russia and China. China is now looking stable. European countries and Canada and a lot of U.S. trading partners, they're now wondering if China's a better place to do business, let alone the regional Asian partners that don't really like China because of the way they've muscled in on them so aggressively over the years, and they were really more closely allied with the United States, but now they're taking a second look like, God, this guy's crazy. I don't know what we can do. South Korea and the Philippines and all of our traditional allies, it's pushing countries closer into China's arms, distancing them from the United States, because rather than put up with this crazy tariff bullshit, all this is going to do is reorient supply chains to cut us out. We are only 5% of the world's population. Would it make more sense if supply chains just reoriented themselves to escape America and avoid all of these tariffs and all this trade? Okay, here's the global economy. We're all over here. And then here's America. It's kind of off by itself over in the Western Hemisphere anyway. We're just cutting it out while we reorient this stuff towards us. That's what they're going to do. If these countries banded together, the idea that they're all going to call him and make individual tariff and trade deals, they could do that. That's what he thinks they're all going to do. But if you were a different country and you were the prime minister or the president, you would be smart and be like, let's get a regional trade alliance together and just all form together, and then we don't have to be extorted like this. This is what some people that are traditionally our allies, this is what they're encouraging the governments of their country to do. Certain politicians, the opposition minister in Japan, he called Trump a juvenile delinquent. It's like, I'm being extorted. I want to encourage the Japanese government, do not negotiate with this. And Japan was considered one of our better bets to put up with this and to eat it. I mean, other countries like Mexico and Canada and most of Europe, they seem less likely to put up with this shit. So if Japan says no and they balk, I don't know who's going to say yes. The country with no people on it, I mean, the penguins, they'll get together and be like, you know, you drive a hard bargain, Trump, but I'm going to make a trade deal with you. Trump had a $25 million bank account in China. He begged them for election help multiple times, like the first impeachment phone call that we've talked about many times on here. He's always been closer to them than he has ever let on. They enjoy the chaos that he brings because they usually benefit from it because our allies become estranged. The global system that America sits at the top of, where the dollar is the reserve currency, most Americans don't have a fucking clue how much that benefits us. For the dollar to be one of the gold standards in international business, for that to be the reserve currency, for a lot of deals to fall on that, everything we've lost in manufacturing jobs and low-wage jobs, we've made up for in financial services, which is more lucrative. People say, yeah, but that money, that mostly goes to the rich people. You don't think it was like that when manufacturing was king in America? The factory age that Trump wants to take us back to, you don't think there were very rich people like Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan? And most people who worked in those factories didn't make hardly any money whatsoever. They just like, well, it was a great day of 14 hours. We even got a 10-minute lunch. It was quite nice. I had a boiled egg. Me and the other four Irish coworkers that I share a tent with, we all shared it. It was good. One of the most persistent problems that I think people are not picking up on with this is the fact that they're not poking holes in the MAGA mythology. That white working class, we just want a job where we can work with our hands. We just want to get in there and twist some pipes and sweat over some steam. And you see people romanticize this. You even see people like Noam Chomsky romanticize this. For whatever reason, every Alabama liberal video I throw up on YouTube, when it ends, they recommend a Noam Chomsky video. I don't know why that is. I don't think our styles are that similar. Yes, we're both liberals, but he might be the most boring man alive, even though he is brilliant. Of course, I'll give him that. Of course, he's quite intelligent, but I often listen to him and his videos are like a cure for insomnia. And I have to think, is that me? Is that really our similar styles? But even he was like, you know, American men in the red states and the Rust Belt, they don't want to take government handouts. They want to work. They want to feel a sense of purpose and a sense of pride. And it's that pride of work. Most of the people that I've met who work in factories would love to work somewhere else. If you told them they could have a better job with better pay that was less stress, hands weren't just the skin about to fall off the fucking bone. Happened to me when I was driving in fence post one time. I had work gloves on, but driving in the fence post, I don't know what it was. The gloves weren't thick enough or something, but I could literally peel the skin off my hand like a glove. It was disgusting. Most people who work those kind of jobs, they're doing them because they don't have options. Would they prefer to do something else? Of course. Stop romanticizing this bullshit with the coal miners. They could be nurses, but hell no! They want to get in that coal mine and they want to breathe that dust and they want to get black lung when they're 45. When they drop dead with tumors in their lungs, they could say, I lived a good life. And then we pour a natural light on their grave. Not a Bud Light, that woke bullshit's got to go, but a natural light on their grave and say, here's a natty light for you, sir. We'll drink it up to you in heaven, but not too nice of a heaven, a working class heaven where you can still mine coal. It's the mythology of MAGA that this manly man, Taylor Sheridan bullshit, most of the people doing that would love to do something else, but they have literally grown up in a town with one industry. They almost don't know how to do anything else. But if you told them, you could make more money and here's a better job and I trust you to do it and you're not going to break your back and kill your hands, of course they would do that. This fantasy people have, like, no, the men who do this work, they want to have a busted knee. They want their knee to be blown out. Some of the friends that I had from high school, literally when I started Alabama Liberal, they're like, if you somehow get a show on MSNBC or whatever, please hire me to be an intern or whatever you need. I mean, people are constantly looking for better jobs. I think it's a fantasy to believe Trump will drive wages down, because the whole thing about the Mar-a-Lago Accords, which I would highly encourage you to look this up, was they think the dollar was too strong and they wanted to weaken the dollar so that way the dollar would be weaker and they can bring more jobs here because wages would be worse, labor costs would go down, and more people could work in a shit sweatshop or factory with bad conditions. I swear that's so crazy. I can't even believe I'm saying that out loud. A president is like, the dollar, the world reserve currency that every other country on the planet Earth wishes they had. Every country in Africa, they say, do you want our local currency? No, it's worthless. Give me the dollar. I want this transaction to go through in dollars. Immediately makes a transaction more attractive. They all wish they had the dollar as their currency. He wanted to deliberately weaken that in hopes that he could bring manufacturing jobs that don't pay that well, the conditions are not that good, the products are too cheap to justify a decent wage, and bring that back here so people could 50 hours a week and here's my paycheck of $500 and maybe I can go to McDonald's once and after that pay my exorbitant rent and healthcare costs because I have no benefits. I sure am glad I now work at a toy factory and we got those jobs back. The sock mills have come back to Fort Payne, Alabama, and they're as horrible a place to work as ever. If you told most people we'll give you universal basic income, do whatever the hell you please, you don't have to work at a sock mill, the fantasy that people wouldn't prefer to do that is just that, a fantasy. And I think what's happened is they've heard so much of that 80s and 90s Ross Perot anti-NAFTA backlash, trade sucks and it's killing us and we've lost a lot of manufacturing jobs. And if he had tried to do some of this in the 80s or 90s or even early 00s, it might have made sense, but he's at least 20 years too late. It's too late to do all this stuff. You can't reorient the supply chains overnight. It's not going to happen. You might have seen on Last Week Tonight where John Oliver showed a clip of a businessman talking about, we don't even make some of this stuff in America. You can't even get some of these supplies in America. Mangoes, you can't grow them in America. When you bring them in, should there be a tariff on mangoes, something that we cannot grow here? Of course not. That's absurd. And it was Howard Lutnick, his own Secretary of Commerce. And then a few days later, mangoes were not exempted from the tariffs. So mangoes were just going to be more expensive, even though we know there's no way that we don't have to import that. And that was one example, the Nintendo Switch, all the components, you have to get them from Asia. Even if they build a factory here to make them, the supply chains are global. So there'll still be some components that have to come from other countries. And then do they get hit by the tariff, even though all the components are coming here so they can be made in an American factory? This is the shit that he's never thought about. What his real business is licensing his name to other people to slap on the side of a building. And he's like, looks good, boss. I'm such a great businessman. I'm a true builder. Illusion that The Apprentice built up, which you almost think, who is still watching The Apprentice? I watched it growing up 20 years ago. You know, I did watch a few seasons early on, but this thing about, well, The Apprentice, it mythologized him into this great line of American business. And then The Art of the Deal, a book whose own ghostwriter has said should be filed in the fiction section. He regrets he ever did it. It's the book that made him rich, and he wishes he'd never released the book. But you think, well, his image as such a great businessman has been burnished in so many people's minds. And it's like, yeah, but are people really that reverent for some old books Donald Trump wrote and The Apprentice reruns? If that were true, wouldn't Mark Cuban, who's currently on Shark Tank and who's been on a show currently on the air for 15 seasons, him going and endorsing Kamala Harris and saying Trump is an idiot, a fraud, a huckster, everybody who's ever worked for him says he ripped me off, he stiffed me, he sucks, do not vote for this man, wouldn't that have carried more weight? And of course, it's really not about the business. It's about the bigotry, also the machismo. We talked in the last episode about race. Now let's get into gender. With that election, you saw a lot of things I've been talking about in this podcast for years. People have ignored this on the liberal side of things, I think too much. I've had episodes about the Pricktatorship, the Menpower, gender drain, destination abortions. Over and over, we've hit the topics Kamala versus Karens. That was right before the 2020 election. I referenced the Think of the Children episode in the 2020 election, fatherhood, where the president between Trump and Biden was kind of like, who is your daddy? Who is your father figure? What kind of man are you aspiring to be? Because that were the choices. And it was like, do you want the kindly old grandpa like Joe Biden? You go and he gives you an ice cream cone, or the mean one like Trump, who's like, why are you wasting money on things? And he never gives you a nickel. And why don't you visit me more? Well, every time I do, you make me feel bad. And you think about that. Who do you want to be and where are you gravitating towards? But right before that was Kamala's versus Karen, about white women, the Karens, who don't want to see people like Kamala Harris succeed, and they want to block her at every turn. So there's been a lot of stuff about gender over the years in this podcast. I kind of didn't realize how much I had done. I thought I'd mostly focused on race and occasionally religion, and then, of course, money, because when you don't have a lot of money and you're not a centimillionaire like Bill Maher and Jake Tapper and some of these other people in the media that have been around forever, you can't just go along with the same stuff that they're going along with, where they think, yeah, you know, wokeness is a big problem. Well, it's not my big problem, because I have real concerns that don't involve me having $100 million to ride out a totally shit economy. I need money, and I can't just go broke waiting on you to work out your cultural grievances towards diversity, equity, and inclusion, you fucking idiot. Men in the media, because they haven't had to think about money for 30 years, of course they don't understand that, and it's not important to them. But other than money and race, I think I've talked about gender probably the third most, which surprised me, frankly, because I kind of try to avoid it, because I think sometimes I don't want women to be alienated listening to this podcast or my YouTube channel or reading my articles. I still hope that they feel comfortable enough that I'm not bashing them or talking down to them in any way, that they won't listen to to that. I think I do a better job of it than a lot of the other male podcasters that I see who really go over the line with a lot of the stuff that they're talking about. The manosphere, which is that men that make podcasts and blogs and they specifically target them towards other men and younger men, they almost brainwash them. I don't think people realize how prevalent that is. Older liberals and then myself and people like that, you know, we're plugged into our own ecosystem. We're not following that stuff. We're not really paying any attention to it. And it has grown and festered and rotted and molded and gotten big and spread because I can give you an example. When I log into YouTube as myself, as Alabama liberal, of course, all the recommendations I see, Robert Reich and A More Perfect Union and all of the liberal stuff, and that's mostly what I see in different short videos by a lot of people I've never heard of, never met, but I get exposed to them. But you'll see that stuff when you're as yourself. But I went to a private window. I'm like, let me see what happens when I'm not myself. And I just go to YouTube. So I'm not logged in and I'm in a private window with no cookies, no previous history whatsoever. And I go into YouTube and it's a lot of, they look like philosophical videos. It's like, here's what Nietzsche said about loneliness. And it's stuff like that. But then you click on them and you start listening to some of them and there'll be a couple of minutes that make sense. By about the middle of it, it'll be like a rant about women and women don't respect weak men. If you're a weak man, don't be surprised when a woman treats you like trash. A woman who throws away your heart once will do it again. So don't cry when it happens because you were already fooled. And it'll be stuff like that. And it's very subtle, but there's a lot of that stuff. And then the more you listen to that, then the more you start getting recommended. Here's Charlie Kirk. Oh, here's Joe Rogan. Oh, here's Jordan Peterson. And they're pushing these people. And a lot of young men, this is all they're exposed to. So if they're not watching MSNBC, and most of them are not, and they don't necessarily relate to Robert Reich or whoever it is because, you know, he's a lot older than they are, they see these young guys. Trump was talking to Jake Paul. And Trump was talking to all these men. And then, of course, the liberals that are idiots usually say, well, why didn't Kamala Harris go on Joe Rogan? Then you look it up and be like, oh, wait, she tried to do that. She literally made an appointment to go to Joe Rogan and he jerked her around. He never wanted her on his podcast. They tried to schedule that and he basically didn't cooperate with the scheduling. She would have went anywhere. I mean, look at her. She went on Fox News. She went on Howard Stern. She went anywhere she could. So this thing about Democrats are afraid to talk to Republicans, that wasn't true. And she tried to get on Joe Rogan's show. And he would not have her on, and a frustration that he jerked her around like that. The fact that Trump, he hit every country with tariffs except Russia. That's not on the manosphere. They don't talk about that. They're not talking about that. They're obsessed with transgender women in sports. And you have all these young boys listening to this, and it's like, wait a minute, you guys don't respect women's sports anyway. You wouldn't watch a WNBA game if I paid you. You don't watch women's sports. You don't care about it. But all these crusty men being like, yeah, we got to protect women's sports. Oh, will you spend $10 to fund this girl? Hell no! Girls' pads and field hockey? Ugh, women shouldn't even be playing field hockey. Well, there's a transgender girl on the team. We got to protect female field hockey players, guys. This is outrageous. So it's just such a hypocritical wedge issue that they're using. And I'm going to say something. I know John Oliver said this, but then there was something else he didn't say. I watched his show about this, and he said one thing that I know in the past, if you listen to this podcast, I know you've heard me say this, which was transgender women in sports is actually a win for liberals because they keep focusing on smaller and smaller things. They started with gay marriage, and then that turned because remember W. Bush against John Kerry 2004? He used gay marriage against John Kerry. Then 4 years later, everybody's like, well, do we really care about this? And then 8 years later, in 2012, Obama was able to use it against Mitt Romney. So it went from a wedge issue for Republicans to a wedge issue for Democrats, where it's like, well, wait a minute. Why do I give a shit? Why is this an issue? How does this affect me? Why shouldn't they be able to get married? I mean, it's just slowly dawned on people where everybody's like, we've got to protect the sanctity of marriage. It's like, Steve, ain't you been divorced 3 times? Yeah, and they all sucked. Like, everybody just changed their mind because it was the sanctity of marriage. America's got the highest divorce rate in the world. What the hell are you talking about? There is no sanctity of marriage in this country. You can watch people get married on a reality show. It was a farce. And then people shifted it into being like, okay, we know that the gay marriage is not sticking. So we're going to go into transgender bathrooms. I know Oliver said this. It was gay marriage, then transgender bathrooms, and then sports. But I have said this before. I'm not saying he got it from me. Sometimes great minds think alike, but I know I have said this before, where they shifted it from the gay marriage debate into transgender bathrooms. And for a while, that was the rage. There was even a bathroom bill, and most of the red states been like, we got to protect women's bathrooms. What are you talking about? Well, if a guy is a man And he goes into a women's bathroom where they're shitting and throwing up. And just to be around that, he's got a lot bigger problems than what they're talking about. Like, something is mentally ill with that dude. People are just using the bathroom. It's not some great hidden getaway. And this, again, shows the immaturity and little boy thinking of Republicans. When you're a young boy and you've never been in a female bathroom, you might think, oh, I'm going to go in there. There's going to be a fountain. Somebody's going to be playing a harp. It's going to be just so nice. Maybe they'll be like, girls are hitting each other with pillows in there, like, and giggling, having the best time. It's like some Porky's fantasy of what happens in a woman's bathroom. You go in there when you clean it as an employee of Food World or Walmart, which I was, and you go in the women's bathroom, you're like, this is the filthiest bathroom I've ever been in. What the hell? Blood on the walls? Like, was a panther back here hunting? Or where the hell did this come from? There's stuff they don't even bother to clean up. It's really not what people think. And when you've actually gone in there to clean it as an adult, you understand that. It is nicer in terms of there's not as much destruction of property. The men's bathroom, because I recently had to go into a women's bathroom. I went to a mall and it was just one of those run down, dilapidated malls, and I really had to use the bathroom. I went into the men's room. The men's room had no sit down toilets. Somebody had literally picked the toilet up and ripped it from the bottom, or they smashed it. I don't know how they did this, but like the sit-down toilet was removed from the wall somehow. And there was, of course, typical men's bathroom. There's like five urinals and one pooper, and that's it in the whole damn bathroom. So I'm like, okay, I don't necessarily want to do this. I'll go into the women's bathroom. This is California. Nobody's going to make me feel guilty. Now, there's not going to be Nelson from The Simpsons or some school bully being like, ha ha, you went in the girls' bathroom. You know, that's not going to happen necessarily, but you still have that tinge of, I don't know if I should cross this invisible threshold. You go in there, and there's a couple of subtle differences, like the fact that they have actual stalls that you can sit down, and the toilet seats don't have people's names carved in them. Every men's room that's in a somewhat sketchy public bathroom, somebody's name is carved into the toilet seat. It's a little bit nicer, but it's basically just a bathroom. And if a guy's in there hanging out, you're pretty sick, honestly. Like, if that's how you're getting your jollies, and it wouldn't even be that big a deal if they were. A lot of conservative women were like, we need protected spaces. We need to be protected. We just can't have this, people intruding in our space. And you're like, come on, like, get real. You're not fucking Betty Boop. Drop the bullshit. And then, because that didn't really catch, then they went into transgender women in sports. And that became the new wedge issue that they were all focusing on. And now they still talk about it. You still have a majority of American adults who think this is a big issue. And this is one of those things where this is what the Republicans do. They take something real small and then they magnify it. And you could almost be like, okay, theoretically, you can kind of see their point. Like, for example, I have a daughter, and it's very, very unlikely, but let's say when she's in high school applying for scholarships to college, and she really needs a sports scholarship to get into a certain school, and we can't afford it, and then if there were a transgender girl who got the scholarship instead of her, I guess theoretically you could say they ripped me off. The same way that they used affirmative action forever. The hypothetical working class white kid who gets ripped off because of affirmative action, and a black kid gets in, and every working class white person, the entire demographic for Roseanne or the Connors, they all think, oh, that's going to happen. You know, that's going to happen to me. It won't. Sorry to tell you that. Your kid is probably not going to get into Harvard no matter what. But in their mind, it's like, Obama, he took that spot. It was supposed to be going to my son who has a horrible GPA and goes to a really bad school and is dumb as a bag of bricks. But he would have went to Harvard if it weren't for affirmative action. They're taking the old affirmative action arguments that don't apply anymore because the Supreme Court overturned affirmative action. Forever, Republicans were like, oh, affirmative action, that's what get black kids into schools. And then it got overturned by the radical right-wing Supreme Court. And then Democrats were like, wait a minute, numbers came in and it's the same. For black students, it was about the same as it always is. And Republicans immediately went to, well, they're just ignoring the court rulings. Harvard and Columbia and all the colleges, and we haven't even touched on that, but all of the colleges that are now having to stand up to Trump and having to fight him on this, where he's like, we got to go into your curriculum and we got to strip out the DEI. This is classic white bigot and somebody like Trump. We got to get rid of affirmative action. That's what's killing us. They get rid of affirmative action. They find out that it didn't primarily get black kids into colleges like they thought it did, the Ivy League schools. And now they're like, well, they're just ignoring the ruling and we have to go in and control who gets in and who doesn't. So racist screams about something forever. It gets overturned. Racist sees that really they are not genetically superior like they think they they are. They don't really have the brain power that they think they do. And then immediately, it's still rigged. I'm still being cheated somehow. These schools that are about 75% white, I'm still being screwed somehow, some way. I'm getting everything I want. If I eat 8 slices of pizza out of a 10 slice pizza, I'm being screwed out of the last 2 slices. Why have they not gone to me? I'm hungry, goddammit. Everyone else can starve because I need those last 2 slices. Very typical robber baron, conservative, white supremacist thinking, and they all overlap. And when it came to girls in sports, I really looked it up because I heard Oliver talk about the transition I did where it comes to gay marriage, then bathrooms, then sports, but I didn't hear him say this statistic. He was trying to argue on a philosophical point, transgender girls in sports, so what, let's do it. But I actually got curious and was like, how many times do girls actually lose scholarships? Never. It never happens. I looked up 530,000 college athletes in the United States. How many are transgender? Less than 10. What the fuck are we even talking about this for? The left is over there trying to fight it on a philosophical point of we should be inclusive. The right's over there demonizing everybody. And I'm looking at this issue like it doesn't exist. Why are we even discussing this? The stuff that is actually killing everybody is rampant and we're barely talking about it. I.e. Russia's takeover of the federal government on behalf of the entire world being pushed into China's arms. But the manosphere is not discussing that because they're so consumed with these cultural grievances. Trump is still able to whip his base into a frenzy about cultural grievances, even though this is the most openly fascist our country has been, I would say in at least 100 years, I'd really say probably since the Civil War era. We have not had this close to open fascism in this country in a very, very long time. And you still have people like Bill Maher going to the White House, basically licking Trump's boots, being like, you know who we have to stand up to? Wokeness, political correctness, the radical left. Who the fuck you talking about? Paramount and ABC, who are being sued by Trump, whose FCC goon Brendan Carr is over there threatening to take their licenses away. He's trying to tell media outlets what they can and can't say. MSNBC fired Joy Reid. CNN fired Jim Acosta. They've already fired Don Lemon. What liberals are you fucking talking about at this moment? The media has never been more right-wing. We barely hear stories get reported on. If they ever do, it's a couple mentions, then they fade away immediately. The New York Times is still dominated by conservatives like Brett Stevens and Ross Douthat. Universities are being muscled in on, and what can you teach, what can't you say? ActBlue is being sued by the Trump administration. There is no left wokeness stopping this and that. He's like, nobody's ever been fired in the media for being too woke. Tell that to Joy Reid. Tell that to Don Lemon. Tell that to Jim Acosta. What the fuck are you talking about? Every day we see more liberal people being pushed out of the media. I've gotten some heat in the past because I'm more pro-Israel than probably 90% of the Democratic Party at this point. But even I look at this and say, I'm not for this bullshit. This is insane. I may not agree with every Palestinian activist who's a student, but of course they have the right to say whatever the hell they want to. Of course they do. If they write an editorial I don't agree with, we can debate it, or they can write it, or I can ignore it. Should they have their visa taken away and thrown into a damn prison, basically, instead of deported back to their home country? No! This is insane. They tried to deport a man that they thought was from South Sudan. He was actually from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And they tried to deport him back to South Sudan. He wasn't from there. South Sudan said, we don't think we should be responsible for taking him. And Marco Rubio revoked the entire visas for South Sudan. Is it going to go back to the way it was? I don't know. Is he going to change his mind again? I'm not sure. Are all the people in South Sudan, a war-torn country that need desperately to be in the United States for their own safety? Is he going to kick them all out? I have no idea. But it was like over a mistake. He threw a hissy fit, and now all the people from South Sudan, which is really just an African country Trump wants to get rid of anyway. He is targeting African and Middle Eastern immigrants viciously, and he's trying to get rid of them all anyway. He'd like to cancel the visas from the entire African continent and majority of the Middle Eastern world, especially if they're not rich and they're not Christian. He would like to kick them all out tomorrow if he could. That's the real goal and what he hopes to do. And the fact that people can make bad faith arguments and that they're like, let's sit down with Steve Bannon. It was bad enough that Bill Maher was sane washing Trump and talking about, he's not as crazy as I thought he was. Why do you say that, Bill? He asked me what I thought about the Iran deal. He's like, you're a smart guy. What do you think about Iran? What do you think about Israel? The fact that he asked you that shows that he is butt fucking nuts. You're a talk show host. You're a fucking washed up 80s comedian whose brain is fried from drugs, and you've had a fucking talk show for 40 years. You never had a credible job doing anything else. You don't fucking know anything about policy or ambassadorships. The fact that you're in the White House and the president is like, what do you think about Israel? What do you think about Iran? And that you're such a narcissist that you don't know That's why he's doing it. He's flattering your narcissism and treating you like a smart guy, treating you like, oh, here's someone who should be listened to. Here's someone that's really brilliant and probably knows about policy. And you think, this proves the president's not crazy. It just shows that he is fucking nuts and you're too narcissistic to know that or see that because he's flattering you a little bit. This is what all dictators do in these countries where they treat the press like their buddies, they're buddying up, they butter them up, and then you slowly soften everything you've ever said about Trump. You do exactly what you did, which is like, who did he have on that night? Piers Morgan and Steve Bannon. Two people that fucking love Trump. One of them who's literally his propaganda minister in Steve Bannon. Who did he have on his Club Random podcast? Charlie Kirk. You're just lying to people. You were a never Trump Republican in the Biden administration. You hit Democrats 10 times harder than you ever did anything Trump was doing during the entirety of the Biden administration. You became a never Trump Republican the second you got glasses on. And now you're not even that. Now you're MAGA, but you don't have the balls to say that because you know that half of your audience will be like, oh, I can't watch this. This is Fox News. If you'd said, I'm not a liberal, I'm MAGA, and Trump's pretty good, and he's doing things I want to do, like get rid of the Department of Education and stop DEI and stop wokeness, everybody would say, oh, wait, you're a 70-year-old bigot, and I'm not listening to this shit anymore, and they'd turn the channel. And then you'd have nothing but the young white men, the horde, who have been brainwashed from YouTube videos to be like, Bill Maher's awesome. He has a real conversation on. He's not just repeating the echo chamber. Why do they say that shit? Because he has Steve Bannon on, and Ron DeSantis, and Ted Cruz, and Elon Musk, and he flirts with them. They laugh, they have a good time. He sane-washes these people to an audience they would never be exposed to. Those people go on Fox News, liberals are not watching them, independents are not watching them. They go on Bill Maher, he's exposing their bullshit to a wider audience and sane-washing it so that it looks reasonable. Well, Ron DeSantis isn't all that bad. He went on Bill Maher. He kept incrementally doing that until he gets to the Alpha and Omega, Trump himself, the 800-pound Mussolini in the room, and being like, hey, Trump's not that bad of a guy. You know, we laughed, we had a few jokes. He wasn't as crazy as I thought he was. Like a week later, he goes on an Easter rant talking about all the liberal lunatics and the people he hates on Easter Sunday, a rant so venomous it killed the Pope. All these memes, too, about did J.D. Vance kill the Pope? He meets with the Pope, and then 12 hours later, the Pope is dead. You have to think, man, Vance is on a real hot streak. Vance, of course, got picked for the vice presidency because he would help Trump relate to that younger male base. It was all about bringing in that hillbilly elegy audience. I've talked about this, where the Republican National Convention, it was a white trash kid's dream. Hulk Hogan and Dana White and Kid Rock and hillbilly elegy dude. Like, just give me some nachos, man. This is great. Like, all they needed was some monster trucks going on in there. Wrestling match, which Trump's been big into UFC and pro wrestling. It's very targeted towards young men. And so now in a country where it's fool's paradise, no country for smart men, where do the smart guys go? You got RFK Jr. pumping obvious bullshit science. You got Pete Hegseth being like, we got to get rid of the wokeness and the DEI hires as he fires the female Coast Guard chief, but she sure as hell looks more qualified than you do right now. I'm half convinced that's why Bill Maher went to the White House, because when Pete Hegseth fires, Trump will hire him to be Secretary of Defense. When RFK Jr. fucks up, he'll hire him to be the Secretary of Health. Bill Maher's on TV. I like people that are on TV. He's got 5 Fox News hosts in his administration, so Bill Maher been on TV. He's on TV. He's good enough for TV. He can be the Secretary of Housing. That sounds good. So whenever somebody fucks up, he can snag one of those jobs. I'm half convinced that's why he went there. The men who would not vote for Kamala Harris, and they could not support her, and they always find some reason. You never hear guys be like, I will not vote for a woman. Maybe some of the Proud Boy types, but I'm talking about some of the dudes who they voted for Obama, then they voted for Trump, then they voted for Biden, then they voted for Trump. I've seen people say that. A lot of people say that. Like, they didn't vote for Hillary. They didn't vote for Kamala. They will not vote for Elizabeth Warren or Nikki Haley or Sarah Palin. I think half the reason they gravitated towards Obama in 2008 was John McCain picked Sarah Palin. And there's a huge chunk of men that are like this. They will not vote for a woman for president. They won't say that, but they won't. And so when you see somebody say, well, Gretchen Whitmer, you know, it's like, come on. I mean, really. And I'm not even convinced she would be good at it. She goes to the White House, takes a photo op with Trump. She's standing behind him, grim face, while he smiles like the devil. He always knows when he's got people, too. When he makes Mitt Romney come to a Secretary of State interview, which he wasn't really considering him, and makes him eat dinner with him, and Romney looks queasy as hell, and Trump's smiling like the devil, and that lighting's on his face, sinister-like. And then he did the same thing with the dinner at Bill Maher, like, hey, you idiot, take a picture with me, you know? And then he does the same thing to Gretchen Whitmer. He's really good at getting the photo op with people that he knows are going to be taking heat over even meeting with him or that may criticize him eventually. And he enjoys making people squirm like that. But seeing her kind of get played, or seeing Gavin Newsom platform some of these alt-right people, or seeing Pete Buttigieg, who goes on these different shows and sometimes repeats libertarian talking points about the free market economy and this and that, I think Democrats are making inroads towards people that they need to make inroads toward, I guess, theoretically. But other than white men, who we have literally never, ever gotten a majority of, what about the Hispanic men who flipped, who were all against Trump in 2020, and then a majority of them voted for him in 2024? I mean, you see people go on the white male mediocre guys, the horde, as I call them. What about like Spanish language radio stations or something like that? What about some outreach into the Latino community? These other guys are deporting us to horrible gulags in El Salvador, but the Democrats are here talking with me, having a beer with me. Maybe this is the path that we should be going down. I don't know. Just a thought. I kind of can't believe that that's even happening, though. The thing with deporting Venezuelans to El Salvador, normally when you get deported, it may not be a fun process, but it is at least a legal process where we take you back to the country you came from and not immediately into a maximum security prison that looks like the scariest damn prison I've ever seen in my life. I suppose so a rival gang can kill them. It's like they're from a Venezuelan gang, so we're going to put them in a prison ruled by MS-13 so they can murder them all, I guess. I don't know. Normally, deportation is not a pleasant process, but it is at least a legal and safe process of we put you on a plane, we send you back to the country you came from, and then you wander around. I don't know what you do. Maybe you go to the Cinnabon at the airport. I'm not sure, but you're back in your home country. What you do next is up to you. They keep calling it deportations. It's rendition. It's an immigration version of rendition where you are taking people off the street, you're putting them on a plane, and you're not taking them back to their home country. You're taking them to a maximum security prison in a country they are not from and have never been to and have no legal right to take them to. This is rendition, but we would do that to terrorism suspects. And some of that was pretty flimsy evidence. Some of it were people who were connected to terrorism. Some of it was people who had a similar name or they had a bank account somehow was connected to an Islamic charity raising funds for terrorism. But that was rendition. That was the CIA. That was very shadowy and secretive. There was no legal basis to do it, but people did it in the war on terror. Now we're treating that as a justification to do that for immigration. Somebody walking down the street, they get picked up, they get shoved into a plane, they get put in a maximum security prison, which is ruled by a rival gang from the nationality you're not from, and you're there, and then the fucking idiot Homeland Security Secretary, who can't even secure her own purse, which feels more like a go bag with cash and a passport in it, probably a fake name passport too. She's like, it was two passports, my real name and Jennifer Johnson, my fake name I'm going to escape to Australia on, and they were both missing, damn it, I need to get them back. Comes to visit them and be like, no bueno, y'all, America's not open for criminals anymore. And they're probably thinking, look at this, I can't even believe this shit. Like, this is what it's come to in my life. Are there better examples of manhood and masculinity for young men to look up to? Because part of getting rid of the toxic masculinity is to look up to better role models. And I thought Joe Biden could have been that, but a lot of men, for whatever reason, didn't see him that way. Black men really gravitate towards Barack Obama. I think he's about the best role model they could have. Is there anybody like that for white men? Well, there is, and his name's Zelensky. Zelensky, the same guy who J.D. Vance and Trump couldn't be half the man Zelensky ever was, insulted him in the Oval Office, did their total Mrs. Putin routine of spreading Russian propaganda. It was very obvious that J.D. Vance was told to provoke Zelensky, that it was all staged so that Trump and Vance could score points with Putin, who I'm sure was watching it in his bunker that he's hiding out in Russia, where he's like, ah, this is great. I'm sure he was loving that shit. Daddy Putin over there. Mrs. Putin, Trump, his prized bitch, really made him proud. And the reason that Trump and Vance hate Zelensky is because he's 10 times the man they could ever be. And Trump and Zelensky specifically, they're almost polar opposites of each other in that they both started out as entertainers. Zelensky started his career as an actor and a comedian. He was in romantic comedies. You can find old movie posters of romantic comedies that he was in, and it's almost unbelievable to see this very brave guy who looks like he's been sleeping in like trenches for the last couple of years, and he's in like romantic comedy posters. But he took a turn into public service. He played a president on television and thought, you know what, maybe I could could do it for real. And then he got in the job and he was able to do it for real. He's been a terrific wartime president. Trump, by contrast, played a great businessman and leader on The Apprentice and built that image and mythology around himself. And then he became elected as the businessman president. And then he's totally flopped and sucked at that image. Zelensky's still married to his first wife. His first wife is the same age he is. He actually is a good father to his kids. He is a good man. He's all the things that Trump could never be. And because they've taken such different paths in life, is why Trump hates him. He's jealous of him. He sees what it should have looked like to Trump's fans. What Zelensky's doing in Ukraine is what it should have looked like for Trump to be elected by his fans. His hero worshiping, He-Man loving, I've got a wrestling action figure on my wall fans, they wanted Trump to be like Zelensky. They elected him to be like that, and then he didn't. He fell back into his worst and most corrupt robber baron instincts. Zelensky is an actually noble person, and those people drive Trump crazy. He hates people like that and must destroy them, much like the devil has to corrupt people. He cannot stand people who are actually virtuous and good. He's like, I got to bring them down to my level. Gravitates towards people he can control, like Bill Maher, but somebody like Zelensky, where it's like, no, I'm going to stand up for myself and my country. Bill Maher taking a cheap shot at Zelensky in one of his monologues, like, at least I wore a suit. A suit's not Zelensky's priority when he's fighting for his fucking life and about to get murdered at any moment. I guess he just didn't really have time to pretend the 1950s never ended wearing that shit. Because Zelensky is more of a man than Trump can ever be, he hates him on a personal level, and that'll never go away. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for finishing my trilogy, American Endgame. We'll see if we're still around and able to do another episode. I hope we will soon. And God only knows what fresh hell will await us by then. But look on the bright side, there's new Mission Impossible movie coming out, so that's not too bad. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.